Morning. Today's daf is Mem in Chulin. We're on Lamed Tes Amud Beis, and we are starting away from the top of the Amud, and let's continue from yesterday's discussion. Okay. Okay, one of the more classic discussions that take place in Shas, which we saw yesterday on Daf Lamed Tes, is the discussion of having a machshava from one avoda to another avoda. In other words, in the world of Pigel, so we know that it's a given, right? The discussion starts with a point that everyone agrees to, that in the world of Pigel, certainly you can have an avoda from a machshava from one avoda to another avoda. There are four avodas when it comes to carbon. So you shecht an animal, and while you're shechting the animal, you say that I'm going to be zorig the blood tomorrow. So that machshava that is really forecasting a future avoda is going to be effective and is going to render the animal an animal which is pigal. What does it work in terms of machshava as well? Machshava of shalal l'shma. So Reish Lakish initially took a position. Reish Lakish initially took a position. No, it doesn't work over there. It only works in the world of pigal. Rav Yochanan corrected his brother-in-law. Rav Yochanan says, no, it works here as well. And so Reish Lakish came around. Reish Lakish said, you know what, you're absolutely right. Okay, and all this comes back to our Mishnah, which really is not the discussion in our Mishnah, because in our Mishnah we had a three-way machlokas. Back in the Mishnah on Lamed Chesam and Beis, the Mishnah brought in the following. What if you shecht an animal that doesn't belong to you but belongs to a non-Jew? And a shochet li'ovid kochavim, not that the guy shecht, but you shecht it for a non-Jew, for not just a non-Jew, but an idolater. What then becomes of the animal? So the Tanna Kamma says it's fine because you did the ma'aseh shechita. The non-Jew may have kavanas. Okay, good, he may have kavanas, but you're the one doing the shechita. Rabbi Elazar says no, the animal's pasul, right? His machshav is going to affect the animal. And then Rav Yossi had this kavachomer. What are you talking about? How can his kavana affect what you're doing? Rav Yossi created the kavachomer. In a world where machshava is posel, which is in the world of karbanos, we find that the owner has no effect whatsoever. So in the world where chulin, where generally speaking machshava does not have a say in the matter, certainly the owner's machshava cannot affect it. So what the Gemara did, that was the three-way machlokas in the Mishnah. So what the Gemara did is it used the kavachomer Rav Yossi to try and impact the discussion of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. Okay, and that's what we saw yesterday, and that all took us to the top of Lamed Tes Amud Beis. We are Tanya Kavasi to Rav Yochanan, three lines for the top of the Amud. We're on Lamed Tes Amud Beis. We're just going to continue. We do have a brisa that supports Rav Yochanan. Shochet sebehem lezrog dam lavoz kochavim ulahakdir chav lavoz kochavim hare elu zivchei meisim. If you shecht an animal, not a carbon, but an animal, and you have intent of avodah zarah for a future avoda. Now, in the world of avodah zarah, we made this point yesterday. There are only two critical moments: shechita and zrikas adam. That's it. Those are your two critical moments. So in the world of shechting a carbon, if shechting an animal for avodah zarah, if while you're shechting an animal, you say, I'm going to be zorig the dam for avodah zarah, zivchei meisim, you created takrovitz avodah zarah. Shechta v'achar kachi shevaleha. So then the brisa takes us to another case. What if you shecht, and after you shechted, you said, you know what, that shechita was for avodah zarah. But you didn't do it at the time, you did it after the fact. Okay? Normally we would, what do you think we should have said? Presumably, any thought you have after the fact is too late. Right? That's normally what you would have said. Zehaya maisa bekesari. So the Braisa tells us that this was an episode in Kesari. Velo amri ba lo isa velo heter. And they said nothing. Meaning, not good, not bad. They didn't say it's aser and they didn't say it's mutter. Period. That is the end of the Braisa. Good. And that's where we got to the end of yesterday's daf. We read over this brisa. We said over the first part we totally understand, meaning the whole reason why the brisa came in is to support and bolster the position of Yochanan, that in the world of avodah zarah you can have a machshava from one avoda to another avoda, from one avoda to another avoda. That we understand. It's the second part of the brisa which is very confounding, because here you didn't have the machshava while you were doing the avoda. You had the machshava after the fact. you asked me, which you know, thankfully no one's going to do, but you asked me and I would tell you, okay, you can have a machshava after the fact. It's not going to help. The machshava needs to occur while you're doing the maisa, while you're doing the actual avoda. So what's the issue? Amra chista. So now the Gemara is going to explain what is the consideration. Lo amra ba'isra mishum kvodun de rabbanan, lo heta mishum kvodun de Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara suggests like this. Well, we're not going to say it's usur because kvodo de rabbanon, meaning we want to show support and deference and reverence to the position of the chachamim. The chachamim say that you shecht an animal and you had no intent while you shechted it. The animal's fine. On the other hand, there's also the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer says that the intent of the owner will affect the animal. So the Gemara says, what does that have to do with anything we're discussing here? Me my. First of all, the Chachamim's position, wait a second. The only reason why the Chachamim said that the Shechit is okay is because you didn't hear anything, right? Remember, when we learned the Mishnah yesterday, we explained that according to the Tanna Kamma fundamentally agrees with Rabbi Eliezer. The Tanna Kamma says that the machshava of the owner can affect the animal. It just happens to be that we're not going to assume that the owner had an intent. Here in this case, I don't know, maybe the owner did have an intent. And maybe also, even Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah that we were discussing was talking about an Ove Kochavim, a non-Jewish idolater. Where there, Rabbi Eliezer will basically say, he's always into his idolatry. He's really into it. So for there, I can hear an argument that, after the fact he said that it was for Avodah Zarah, you know what? Probably during the case as well, his intent was for Avodah Zarah, right? And we can make an argument of Hochich Sofa Al Tchilaso. The post shechita excitement that he had, this is for Avodah Zarah, we could back it up and we could say, he probably had that excitement, that exuberance during the shechita as well. But here we're talking about, not where you shechted it on behalf of a non-Jew, but you shechted on behalf of a Jew. And even if he said afterwards it's for Avodah Zarah, we're not going to assume that he's always thinking about Avodah Zarah. So Ela Amrav Shizbi, Lo Amrav Bahetam Mishum Kvodah Dereshem Gamliel. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to give now a different approach to this brisa, and that we are not going to say, why didn't they say that it was mutter? Meaning, fundamentally, the position really should be that it's mutter. Again, let's go over the case. The case is simple. You shechted an animal that belongs to somebody else, another Jew, and after you shechted it, he says, oh, good. I'm so happy you shechted it because I was thinking about Avodah Zarah, right? The owner. And we're going to suggest that we're going to hold like the Tanna Kamma and like Rav Yossi, where the owner's intent can affect the animal, but he had the machshava. It can affect the animal, but he had it after the fact. If he had it after the fact, how can an after the fact intent affect the animal? So really, in theory, it should be fine. The animal should be totally fine. Whatever intent he had after the fact, it's too late. It's post facto. The Gemara says, well, maybe out of respect to the opinion of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Okay, now, I haven't mentioned his name yet. The Gemara has not mentioned his name yet. So what we're going to be doing now from here until the bottom of the Amud is we're going to be learning a number of positions of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Essentially, all of them point to the same basic idea of Hochich Sofa Tchilaso, meaning that what you see, behavior that you see after the fact, can retroactively be traced back to an earlier point in time. Meaning if you see him in a certain state at this point, you can say that he was in that state, in that particular state, even beforehand as well. So if Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds that position, which we're going to prove in just a moment that he does, so if he holds that position, so we could say over here, same thing. That if the owner says, after the fact, you know what, that was L'shem Avodah Zarah, so according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, we could say that state that he was in, that intent that he had, can go back and be traced back even to the point of Shechita.
Even though there was no speech before.
Right, even though he didn't tell you that beforehand, But this is an argument of Hochiach Sofo Atchilaso. The end proves the beginning. Okay. The end is demonstrative of the beginning. So, let's see this inside. Where does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel say this? So, we're going to go through a bunch of them. So, Mishum Kvod Hashem Gamliel. Hi, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Ile, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel de Gittin. So, the Gemara says, let's start off with a Mishnah in Gittin. Did not, the Mishnah says like this. Habar Shamar Kisvu Get Lishti, Rasa Sachik Ba Umaisa, Babar Shamar Kisvu Get Lishti, Va'ala Lagag, Va'nafal Umais, I'm Hashem Gamliel, Ime Atmanafal Harizah Get, V'yamaruch Tachas, or Eno Get. Okay, a little bit of background information. Okay, instructions, a man wants to get a divorce from his wife, and he wants to instruct somebody to give a get to his wife. So if he just simply says, Kisvu Get Lishti, I want you to write a get for my wife, that's not enough instruction. He has to say kisvu utanu. Right? There are two formulaic words that need to come out of the man's mouth. Number one, he needs to say kisvu, right? Utanu, and he needs to give instruction and give it to her. Okay? This is kisvu utanu. By just saying the word kisvu by itself, the Mishnah says it, right? He's just playing games. Right? Just torturing, tormenting his wife, and it has no legal significance whatsoever. Just saying the word kisvu by itself. Okay? So, the bari, the healthy person, I'm going to go over the Mishnah again. Sha'amar kisvu get li'ishti. And he says, I want to write a get for my wife. Ratzel sachik bo. So, the Mishnah just simply says, he's just playing. In other words, what he says has no legal value whatsoever. Okay, it's simply disregarded. Umaisa babari sha'amar kisvu get li'ishti. Then the Gemara tells the following story, where there was a person who presumably was healthy. He said, kisvu get li'ishti, and he only said the word kisvu. Va'ala lagag, and he goes up to the rooftop, v'nafal, and falls off the rooftop, umeis, and he dies. Okay. Now, this woman is one of two things. Either she's a divorcee or she's a widow, right? She's not married anymore, that's for sure. It's hard to be married when your husband's dead. So she's either a divorcee or she's a widow. We've talked about this many times, right? The advantage of being a divorcee over being a widow, right, the yibum. The advantage of being a widow over a divorcee is a kohen, right? But the stronger advantage, assuming there is a surviving brother, the stronger advantage of being a divorcee over a widow is yibum, right? Because you're not stuck, you're not locked to your nutty brother-in-law. Okay. So is she a divorcee? Is she a widow? So Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, this is all still part of the Mishnah. So if he jumped off the roof, committed suicide, the get's a good get. Okay? We're going to obviously need to understand this. If he jumps off the roof, the get's a good get. But if it was an accident, he really didn't intend to fall off. It's the wind that pushed him off, so it's not a get. Okay. The Gemara looks at that Mishnah, blinks a little bit, and says, wow, I don't get it. What just happened over here? What difference does it make whether he jumped off the roof or the wind? I don't understand. V'havina ba, maisa listor. So the Gemara says, I don't understand what's going on over here. The story that the Mishnah tells contradicts what the Mishnah just said. The Mishnah started off, the opening premise of the Mishnah is that if your instructions are just write the get, that's nothing, right? It's just Rasul Sachik ba, he's just tormenting her, he's torturing her, but it has no legal value whatsoever. And then the Mishnah continues and talks about, well, if he jumps off the roof versus where the wind pushed him off, I don't understand. So the Gemara says, Chusur Mechzer V'Achi Ketani. So what we're missing is a little piece of the Mishnah, and we're going to insert a little bit more into the Mishnah, and the Mishnah is going to be much clearer. Im Ochir Sofat Chalas Arezeh Get. If the person is himself suffering from illness, and in this particular case, it's mental illness, but illness is illness, right? If he's suffering from illness and he says the word kisvu, we don't assume that he's playing with his wife. We assume that really his full intent is to divorce her, and he knows that he's ill, and he knows that he is dying, either physically or just mentally snapped. And so the only reason why he didn't say kisvu tanu is because, you know, he's the stress and the pressure.
There's a difference between physical illness and psychiatric illness. Psychiatric illness says it should not be complicated. I mean, physical illness that he knows that he's going to
Okay, I mean, you know.
Is that thinking right?
Right. Understood. So, but I guess he has enough. You're right. Your point is well taken. I guess he has enough mental cognizance where he can, in fact, affect again and order instructions to write again and give it to her. So, but the point is that if you see that he is in anguish, and it's evidenced by the fact that after his instructions, he goes and he jumps off the roof. So now you understand that when he said kisvu, he wasn't just looking to play with his wife. He actually wanted to give her a divorce. I.e., the instructions should have been kisvu utanu. The Gemara says, we'll give him a pass on that. Right? Watch. Hareze get umaisa nami, but bar sharma kisvu get lishtiv, ala lagav, but nafal mace. Amrav shimon gamlil, imatzmo nafal hareze get. If he jumps off himself, that was a get. Meaning, Rav Shimon Gamil says, we will look at the actions that occur after he gave instructions. And that will prove what his mental state was when he gave the instructions. So you see that Rav Shimon Gamliel subscribes to this idea of Hochiach Sofo Al Tchiloso. The end will prove what's occurring in the beginning. Meaning the fact that he jumped off will show us that when he gave the instructions, he was not mentally fit. No, let me say it better. Meaning, it's understandable why he didn't say the words kisvu tenu, which is what he should have said. However, but if the wind pushes him off, meaning he didn't really had no intention of falling off the roof, right? He didn't fall off the roof. He was pushed off the roof. Okay, natural events. What he's doing up on the roof, I don't know, maybe just, you know, trying to get thinner air. But he wasn't interested in killing himself. That was an accident. So his instructions of kisvu are not to be reinterpreted. It is what kisvu normally means, which is, I'm just write it for her, but I'm not, you know, I'm just looking to play with her. So therefore the get's not going to be a good get, and therefore she's a widow and not a divorcee.
So it's let developments define intent.
Right. And developments after the fact will define intent even prior to the fact. So the Gemara says, so you see that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds that position. So now we can go back to our story in Kesari, and now we'll say, oh, that's it. Meaning, the owner of the animals expressed his desire for that shechita to have been l'shem avodah zarah. So maybe out of respect for Rav Shimon Gamliel and his position, maybe that's why they said, you know what, we're not going to matter the animal. Gemara says the cases are not exactly the same. They're not exactly the same. And how do I know they're not the same? Because in the case of the get, at least at an earlier point in time, he was discussing get. Meaning, it didn't come out of nowhere that he's on the roof and he's falling off the roof. Meaning, it preempted with instructions to actually write a get. So it's easier for us to link his actions with an earlier intent because that earlier intent was actually supported with instructions as well. But here in the case of Shechita, you had no idea that the owner of the animal wanted it for L'shem Avodah Zarah. Only after the fact that he come along and say, oh good, I wanted that to be L'shem Avodah Zarah. And now you're going to take that statement and you're going to move it back, but you don't have anything to move it back to. He didn't say anything earlier. So it's not exactly the same. The Gemara says, I'm not really comfortable with the comparison of the two cases. So good. So v'demashani hasn't dekamer kisu el amar ravina mishum kvoda Rav Shimon Gamliel dahacha. Gemara says fine. Let's go to another one. Let's try it at another Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Tanya kosim nechasav la'achere. Okay, Mishnah Baba Basra, Bryson Baba Basra discusses the following situation. I no longer have a need for my worldly possessions. Right, I'm over with that. Right, that's, you know, it was exciting while it lasted, but I'm done. Okay, so I take all my assets and I gift it over to my good friend. Good. V'hayu b'hem avadim, and amongst my assets, I had slaves. Okay, Evikanani is chattel. It's part of your portfolio, and so fine. So I give it over to them. And v'amar hala I efshi b'hen. So the recipient says, "Look, the car, the house, I'll take it. I'm fine with that. But I don't want the avadim," right? It's maintenance, meaning as much as they're going to serve me, right, I have to, you know, I'm just not interested.
Sell it. Well, why not?
Okay. Understood. But he doesn't want the headache. Just doesn't want the headache. So efshibahem. So now listen carefully, because the Bryce says now you would think, right, as a recipient of the gift, and the Gemara is about to make this point in just a moment, you can choose what you're going to receive and what you're not going to receive, meaning you can't be force-fed a gift. If you're given a gift and you don't want it, so legally, you don't have to accept it. So hold that thought, because the Gemara is going to make that point in just a moment. But just listen to the Braisa. Im hayor rabush any kohen hare elo ochle b'truma. So if the recipient is a kohen, so these avadim can eat truma. Meaning, there was a transfer. The eved actually transferred over to the recipient, and the eved actually can eat truma. Now, our immediate reaction should all be, what? That he said he didn't want them. How did the transfer work? Okay, hold that thought. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer, Kemish, Amar, Hali, Yavshibahem, Kfar Zachabem, Yarshin. So Rav Shimon Gamliel takes the position, which really intuitively is what we all would have thought. I speak on behalf of everyone here in this room, naturally. So, okay, that's a little presumptuous. But I think we're all in with Rav Shimon Gamliel, which is, what do you mean? The second guy said he didn't want it, which means, of course, then that the transfer wasn't a good transfer, which means that it reverts back to the gifter. Gifter dies, it goes down to his children. Okay? Straightforward. Huh? It could be, the Gemara is not going to assume that. The Gemara is going to assume that whatever he accepts, and whatever he doesn't want, you're right, by the way, you could certainly put that condition into it. You're certainly right. He could have. Doesn't sound like that's one of the issues over here. The Havinan Ba. Now, the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. Latana kama filo mivitzavach? Right? I just don't understand. Meaning, according to the Tanakama, the recipient stands there, and let's say he's a Kohen. Well, it doesn't matter what he is, Kohen Levi Yisrael. He could be whatever he wants. If he's telling you, I don't want it, so you cannot be forced a gift. A gift, by its very definition, means that the recipient has to agree to accept it. You can't be forced something. So, Amar Rava Vitem Rav Yochanan B'tzavach Mikara. Dekuli Amar Lo Pligi De Lo Kana. So, the Gemara here now is going to help us with our parameters. If the recipient, from the very beginning, meaning from the point of saying, here's a gift, and he says, no, thank you, and right there, the Gemara uses stronger terminology, right? Amar Vitzavach, he stands in and screaming, I don't want it, right? Not no. So we all understand, we all agree that he can't be forced a gift. B'shosik v'tzav tzavach t'kulam lo b'ligit t'kana. Now, if at first he's quiet, meaning quiet here means acquiescence, he says nothing, but by saying nothing, he's basically saying, sure, love it. Shtika koda, right? Love to receive the gift. And after having received the gift and seeing now that it's a slave, it's a whole family of slaves, and you know, at first it may have seemed okay, but now he realizes that the maintenance and, right, and none, it's right, it's too much, right? And then he complains, but it's too late, though, because once you make an acquiescence, once you agree to receive it, so now the kinyan, the transfer has been established, and there's nothing more to talk about. Right. So ki pligi shezich lo yidei acher v'shasik lo v'sof tzavach. So the Gemara says the case over here is a nuanced case. It's somewhere in the middle between the two ends, the two extremes. The first extreme, the first extreme is where from the very beginning he says I don't want it. The second extreme is where he agrees, and then afterwards he says, I don't want it. Okay, those are your two extremes. Here, the machlokis in this particular braisa is in somewhere in the middle, where it was zicha yide acher, right? The transfer wasn't directly from gifter to receiver, but it was done through an intermediate, right? Zachen la'adam, right? You can give something to somebody else, right? Zachen la'adam shalom b'fanav. Now, that only is true if you know that the recipient wants it. So here you are mezaka yid acher. You use a third party to create that transfer. Okay. At the point of that transfer, the recipient didn't say anything. But afterwards, when learning about it, he said, no. He expressed a displeasure in the gift. Now, the Gemara says, if his first reaction when learning about this was silence and acquiescence, so that's a kinyan. And later on, he's screaming. That's because he's trying to retract, but too late. Because if his first reaction was silence, that's acquiescence. Reb Shimon Gamliel Savra Hochiach Sofa Tchilaso. So, and Reb Shimon Gamliel says no. His protest, even though it's a little bit late, but his protest can now be understood that even upon originally learning that he received it, he was also protesting. In other words, it was basically a silent protest turned into a loud protest. So the Gemara says, "I v'hadol tzavach meikara." Why was it silent protest? Meaning, if he didn't want it, why didn't he say something the moment that he understood? Because he's thinking to himself, well, he didn't actually hand it to me. He handed it to somebody else. Granted that that was in order so that I get it, but maybe, and this is me talking now, this is not the Gemara saying this, but maybe he didn't fully understand that it was, you know, third party, but really to him. Maybe that was it. Right, maybe he thought he still had time, but over there, but once he makes a loud protest, even though it's after the fact, we're going to assume that he was also protesting even at the point of transfer as well. Okay, so again now, that's a better Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, because that one shows us that we could take a protest that he makes later and bring it back. Hochiach sofo atchilaso. Better than the case of Gittin, because in the case of Gittin, he actually said in the very beginning Kisvu, so there we could bring it back to the point of Kisvu. Here, you have actually nothing to bring it back to, but still Rosh Hashanah Gamliel brings it back. In the case of shechting of an animal for Avodah Zarah, where the owner, after the fact, says, oh good, I'm glad you shechted it, it should be for Avodah Zarah, so here as well, according to Rosh Hashanah Gamliel, we bring it back to the point of Shechita. Okay. On all this, the Gemara finally comes up with some restatements. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Halachika Rav Yossi. Okay? Three positions in the Mishnah. Ultimately, the Gemara conclusively says the Halacha is like Rav Yossi. Let's remind each other, what does Rav Yossi say? Intent of owner is non-effective. Period. So that means that you shecht an animal. The animal doesn't belong to you, it belongs to a non-Jew. He, while you're shechting it, is saying, this should be for Avodah Zarah. And he says it even at the time when you shecht it. Doesn't matter. He's not the Oved. He's not the one actually doing the service. You're the one shechting. So his intent will not affect you whatsoever. Okay.
Wasn't that in cases also he agrees with that?
Well, meaning in all the other cases, Rav Yossi would agree with that. And the Gemara says, and that's the halacha. Halacha does in fact follow like Rav Yossi. And by the way, not only would Rav Yossi say that in the case of Chulin, Rav Yossi was also saying in the case of Kachim as well. Meaning intent of the owner of the animal is also not going to affect the animal as well. Okay.
Intent of the owner, even if it's a Jew.
Even if it's a Jew and even if it's a carbon.
So it's finished.
Well, changing his mind is a little bit different. But in other words, if he's the owner and the owner's standing right behind the Kohen's doing the Shechita, and the owner says, I'm eating this carbon 3 days from now, right? You would say that's pigal. Rav Yossi says no, because only the one doing the shechita, only he can affect with a machshava. Even the owner now is removed from the discussion. Again, Tanakama, Rabbi Elazar disagree with Rav Yossi. The Gemara says the halacha is like Rav Yossi.
And then the Gittin and the...
Well, the case of Gittin is different, though, because those are not... Those aren't machshava issues. Those are, you know, the case of Gittin and the last case of Kinyan. Those are cases of, you know, what was his intent at the time. Here we're talking about machshava, machshavas pigel, machshavas of chosazmano.
What's happening in the mind of the person who's doing a mitzvah?
Even though ownership in the world of carbon, ownership is very important. You have to, you know. Obviously, the whole carbon is brought on behalf of the owner. That's true, but the psulim of pigol of shalal lishma, that can only be affected by the one who's doing the avodah.
So if the owner has in mind to bring the carbon for pasul avodah zarah, right?
Right.
And give it to the Kohen to do it, and Kohen does it in the
right
in the for Hashem. Which one is?
Cohen. Cohen is going to win out. Uh-huh. Owner is, you know.
Even if it's preconceived.
I don't, you know, right. It's a little.
The time of comment, they probably would.
Right. Right. According to the Tanakhama, according to Rabbi Eliezer, the owner's intent can affect. Right. According to Rabbi Yossi, the owner's intent can.
It doesn't matter what a person thinks when he brings a korban to Beit HaMikdash. Even if he brings it for Avodah Zarah, it's going to be, as soon as the coin works on it, becomes for Hashem. The status changes.
It's not a question of status changing, meaning it's a korban. As long as he's, as long as he originally designated as a korban.
As long as the coin is doing it, it becomes for Hashem.
Right. Correct.
Yeah. All right,
so that's a right. All right, that's a different story.
Right.
Okay. Let's wrap this up. Okay. Let's table the discussion for after. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmah Loch Rabbi Yossi." Hanu Taya Da'asal. It's the Kunya Arabs. Arabs come along, and Arabs come to Tzikunya. Was that the name of a town? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yahiv Dichre Latavche Yisrael. Okay, so they have rams. They give the rams to Jewish shochtim. So Amru Lahu Damar V'Tabli Didan Mashchel Bisro Liditchu. They want to try to make the following arrangement. We want to keep. This is what the Arabs say. We want to keep the blood and the fats. And you can get the good stuff. You get the hide. You'll get the meat. So shachar of tuve bar rav masal lekamid rav Yosef ki agav namai. Okay, well, what's the halacha over here? Meaning, and these Arabs wanted to retain these portions of the animal for their avodah zarah. So essentially, now they are the part owners of the animal. They want to sell the animal, but not the totality of the animal. Just simply parts of the animal. Okay, the good parts of the animal they want to sell, but still. Other parts of the animal they want to retain for themselves and for the purposes of avodah zarah. So my shalach lehach am Rav Yehuda amar shmo halacha Rav Yossi. So the halacha is like Rav Yossi, meaning owner does not affect the animal whatsoever, even though they retain certain ownerships of the animal, even though they have some share in the animal, doesn't matter. So am le Rav Achav le Rav Ev le Rav Ash le Rav Lazi Yaiv le Zuzi le Tavach Yisrael my. So okay, so the Gemara says fine. That's the halacha. The halacha is like Rav Yossi, which at this point in time, the Gemara really could stop. And the Gemara could just simply say, okay, good. Meaning, the Jew could shech the animal and be done with it. Now, what if you are Rabbi Eliezer? Okay? I know, the Gemara now is getting philosophical on us. Huh? Right. So if you're Rabbi Eliezer, so you would have a serious issue, because according to Rabbi Eliezer, the intent of the owner obviously now it's going to play a significant role in this animal. And if they want to use even parts of the animal, remember, we talked, right, when we talked about the mission, we talked even the diaphragm of the animal. Here you're talking about the blood and the fats, right, significant parts of the animal. So if you're Rabbi Eliezer, so Yoiv Le Zuzel Etavach Yisrael Mai. So what if they give money to the butcher? So Amar Le Chazinani Inish Alamahu Delamati Matchile Aser V'ilo Amar Le Reishach Vahar. So his answer goes like this. Now remember, by the way, this give and take of the last lines of Gemara is only according to Rabbi Eliezer. Now, the if he is strong, if he's a strong, influential person, Rashi says we're talking about the non-Jew, meaning the non-Jew gives money over to the Jew. And he says, "Here, I want you to shech the animal." And the Jew can't get out of it. It turns out now that money is a kinyan gomor, meaning it's really, you're talking now about where the non-Jew actually now purchases part of the animal and has now shares in the animal. So for Rabbi Eliezer, that would be a problem, because that means that the non-Jew now is a shareholder in the animal. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, that's it. He will affect the animal with his intent. However, if this non-Jew is not strong, right, not politically, not personality-wise, and basically what the butcher could say to him is, you know, you see your money over here? Gemara has a great expression, reshech vahar, head and mountain. Rashi explains this expression, high reshcha vahai har. right? Here's your head. Here's the mountain. Hika ze al ze. Why don't you bang one against the other? Great. It's great. Oki baldina shocha v'kevin them, right? In other words, take your money back. V'kevin them asa l'tchui v'shach d'chishach yisrael la v'adayta do v'kochavim k'shach v'eino nasa shucho al karcho. So that now means that if you have the power to just basically say to the non-Jew, here, take your money back, right? I don't want your money. Turns out now that even when you shecht it, and even if he does accept part of the shears of the animal, but at the time of shechita, he didn't necessarily do it for the non-Jew. So it turns out now that you can say that you shechted it primarily for yourself. So Rashi writes, Einu nasa shuchal karcho demeimar amar ha-yisrael ibe'inam ha-hadrin le'zuzeh hilkach sharyeh. It basically depends, explains Rashi, whether or not he could force himself upon you as a partner. Meaning, once he gives you money, and basically now, if he's a strong Ove Kochavim, he has political influence, he has just a strong personality, and you basically can't hand him back the money at any point in time, so now the Shechita was done for you and for him, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that's going to be a problem. If, however, you can return back the money, you opted not to, but you had the ability to return back the money, so then that doesn't mean that he's forcing his partnership upon you, and you can't shech the animal. Again, In this particular case, it's a little bit philosophical because the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, right? It's interesting. I don't know why the Gemara has this discussion, right, in this context, because that's not the halacha. The halacha is like Rabbi Yosi.
Maybe it's important.
We do learn important ideas regarding forcing a partnership versus not forcing a partnership, the ability. If you have an ability to give money back, it's not considered a partnership at the time. We do learn concepts like that, but in this particular halacha, even if it is a partnership, so what? I'm doing the shechita, his intent will not affect my shechita. Okay, let's begin. Okay, last discussion that we're going to have, there's a couple more mishnayos, but basically now, from this point forward until the end of the second perek, we are now moving our attention, we're moving our discussion to a discussion of shechting for Avodah Zarah. Okay? A lot of the concepts that we'll be talking over the next 2 days, 3 days, let's say 2 days, right? We need to finish by Sunday, is going to be discussions about Avodah Zarah. Masecht Avodah Zarah is going to come in handy right now. But we'll go over some of the more basic ideas that are involved. Hashochet l'shem harim l'shem gvoz l'shem yamim l'shem naharos l'shem midbaros shchitaso psula. Yishecht for a mountain, meaning we all pray to a particular mountain, right? That's called Avodah Zarah, by the way. In other words, obviously not endorsing, in fact, we're a strong condemnation, but the Mishnah here discusses what if. What if a person shechts an animal for a particular mountain that he's worshipping? Or for a valley, or for a river, or for a particular desert. So the shechita is not a good shechita because you shechted for Avodah Zarah. The Gemara immediately will jump on this because the Gemara says, shechita psula, say more, right? Say it strong. Why don't you say that the animal is takrovis Avodah Zarah? You understand the difference, by the way. Shechita psula just simply means that the shechita is invalid. Right. Okay, so you can't eat it. You're right, but it's an avela. You can give it to your dog. Why doesn't the Mishnah say something stronger like Takrovis Avodah Zarah,
which is Aser
Ba'anah? Okay, the Gemara is going to jump. Well, let's wait a moment. We have a little bit more to go in the Mishnah. Shnayim Ochsim B'Sakin, two people holding the knife. V'shochten Echad L'Shem Echad Mikol Elu V'Echad L'Shem Dever Kasher. Two people holding the knife. One of the people holding the knife is an idolater, and a real idolater. And anything that we just discussed in the Mishnah, he had that in mind. I'm shechting the animal for a mountain, for a river, for anything we just had in mind. And the other person is, you know, just a regular Jew. And has, you know, nothing bad in mind, right? Ashamed of her kasha. Rashi says, just simply means shechting. Shchitas Psula. So the Ovid of Orozar in this particular case is going to win out. He's holding the knife. He's giving some koach to the Shchita. So therefore, he's injecting into the Shchita his machshava of Avodah Zarah. Okay. Psula in Zivchei Mesim La. Nigamar now goes right back to that first line of the Mishnah, and the Gemara jumps. And the Gemara says, I don't understand. Why, when the Mishnah says that the Shchita is no good, why is the Mishnah giving us a very, very easy description of what kind of Shchita that was? It was an Shchita Psula. The Gemara says, what do you mean? It should be Zivchei Mesim. Gemara has that terminology for something that was used for Avodah Zarah, Zivchei Mesim. Right? Obviously a pejorative way to describe it, but the Gemara says when we talk about Avodah Zarah, you could speak in pejorative terms. That's fine. It's not only fine, it's in fact endorsed. So Zivchei Mesim, lover, imenu. And not only that, but the Gemara says, let me show you a Braisa. Right? It happens to be Tosefta. I only know that because of the side of the Gemara, and not because I learned Tosefta. Hashoche l'shem harim l'shem gvaos l'shem naros l'shem midbaros l'shem cham l'van l'shem kochava mazal l'shem michal hasara gadol. And you shechted for mountains, valleys, deserts. You shechted for the sun. You shechted for the moon. You shechted for the kochavim umazalos. I mentioned this many times. Kochavim, the stars, mazalos, planets. Right? The reason why, right? You know the difference? I don't know. Stargazers in this room? Right, I'm an amateur, a rank amateur stargazer. So the difference is that stars are in a fixed location in the sky. Planets are always moving in position, right? So you're not going to find planets in the same place in the evening sky in two consecutive nights. They're always in motion. But that's why they're called mazalos, from the word zil, means to go. They travel. Okay, good. L'shei michal asara gadol shem shulshol katan. Right, for this big entity, for this big deity, for the shilshol katan, for the small worm, whatever the case is, hare elu zivchei mesim. The Braisa says in any of these cases, the animal that you shechted towards the deity is considered zivchei mesim. No good. Meaning the Braisa says it, and the Braisa says it seemingly correctly, and much stronger than what our Mishnah did. Our Mishnah chulin just simply says that the Shechita is Shechita Psula. And meanwhile, the Braisa says it's Zivchei Mesim. Amar Abaye Lokasha. So Abaye says, well, we're going to resolve it like this. Had Amar Lahar, Had Amar Legada Dahar. In our Mishnah, you're shechting it for the mountain. Meaning you're trying to deify a mountain. Mountains are not to be deified. Meaning, you could try, right? But just simply, mountains do not become deities. In the case of the Braisa, the Tosefta, that the Gemara quotes, that's talking about Ligada Dahar, to the god of the mountain, right? It's interesting, by the way, the Gemara's use of the word Ligada Dahar. I'm not a linguist, so I do not know, but it is interesting that, right, we use, for purpose of deification, we use the word God, the English word God, and the Gemara uses a very similar word, legada dahar. So, but that's where the difference lies. Meaning, as Rashi explains, in our Mishnah, where you're shechting the animal, but you're not shechting it towards a deity, you're shechting it towards a mountain. Meaning, you think that the mountain itself has some power, is something intrinsically, qualitatively good about the mountain. Right? Something like that. But it's just a mountain. Meaning, and mountains cannot be deified, right? For example, says Rashi, you bow down to a mountain. Mountain doesn't become Asr, right? In the case of the Tosefta, you recognize that it's just a mountain. You're not shechting it for the mountain, you're shechting it for the god of the mountain. Okay, now you're in the world of Avodah Zarah. Now you're actually serving an Avodah Zarah with this, and so therefore it becomes Takrovas Avodah Zarah. Dekanami Dektani, in fact, read the Tosefta again, says the Gemara, and you will see that this answer of Abaye is very correct. Because Dumi Demichal Sar Hagadol Shmamina. Because if you look in the Braisa says a list of things. And in that list of things, we talked about mountains, valleys, rivers, deserts, and then the Braisa goes on to discuss other things. Sun, moon, stars, planets, and then it actually talks about worms, Michal, Sar HaGadol, we're actually talking about entities, deities. So clearly this Tosefta is talking about where you're shechting it towards an actual deity, Shema Mina. Okay, good. So contradiction between the Mishnah versus the Braisa, Abai gives a very clear resolution between the two. Amar Rav Huna, and by the way, just one other point I should try to make clear. So in the case of our Mishnah, meaning you're shechting it to a mountain, not to the deity of the mountain, but to the mountain itself, right? Or you're shechting it to a river. So according to the strict letter of the law, it's not real Takrovitz Avodah Zarah, because a mountain is not an actual deity. So what? So rabbinically, the Chacham came along and said, but you know what though? We're gonna disqualify it. And the Chachamim came along and disqualified the animal. The Chachamim, however, did not give it the status of Takrovis Avodah Zarah. Meaning what the Chachamim did is the Chachamim just simply said, the Shechita is not a good Shechita. The animal is not considered Shechted. Okay. But not to go so far as to say that it's actual Takrovis Avodah Zarah. Amar Rav Huna. From this point forward now, the Gemara will spend the rest of the daf talking about the halacha of Rav Huna. Okay. My friend has an animal, okay? And he's not really my friend, but for purposes of the discussion, let's just call him my friend. He has an animal. And the animal was squatting in front of an idol, a deity. And I go ahead and I just start making an incision into the neck of the animal, meaning I shecht it. And I shecht it for the deity. Now, immediately, one red flag should go off for everyone here, and that is, Ein Adam Oser Davar She'eino Shelo. You cannot prohibit something that does not belong to you. Meaning your right to prohibit something is limited only to something you own. This is not your animal. This is your friend's animal. Okay? And what you did is you went ahead and you started now shechting your friend's animal for Avodah Zarah. So immediately your visceral reaction should be, you can't prohibit the animal, it's not yours. Rav Huna says, listen carefully, Kevin Sheshecha Basemen Echad Asra. Once you cut one sim and one pipe, and one pipe over here doesn't mean one pipe. Meaning, once you start making an incision into the neck of the animal, so it becomes Asra. Becomes Takrovis Avodah Zarah. How does that work? So,
can you argue that since you made a cut, it's like a shinui, you've actually acquired it?
Okay, excellent. Okay? Excellent. So, Ksavar, ki hai da'amar ula'amar av yochanafa bishamar mashachav labayim et chavar lo asra asa ba'maisa asra. So, the Gemara says, look, there is a rule out there that ein adam osa davar sheino shelo, that you can't prohibit something that doesn't belong to you. That's without an action. Once you involve an action in the discussion, so now you could prohibit things, even things that do not belong to you. Okay. So now you're going to come along now, and you can, with an action, actually make something Takrovis Avodah Zarah, even though it doesn't belong to you. If I went down to my friend's house and I bowed down to his animal, that doesn't do anything. Even though I'm deifying an item, if it's not my item, if it's someone else's item, that does nothing. But if I do an action to it, now Ben's explanation is excellent. Maybe that action makes a shinui, right? And a shinui maisa, it makes a kinyan on the item. Okay, maybe that's the explanation. But whatever the explanation is, with an action, I can make something prohibited. So Ezra of Nachman Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, let me ask the following question. Based on the following braisa, Hashochet chatas b'shabes b'chutz la'avodas kochavim chayev shalosh chataos. When we get to Krisus, the Mishnah is going to love to do this. How many isurim can we get out of one act? So let's talk now about the following. This is not a Mishnah in Krisus. This is out of Psachim, but let's discuss the following scenario. It's a karban chatas. It's Shabbos. And we're outside the base of Mikdash. And I shecht it. And I shecht it for the purposes of idolatry. So, ring it up, right? You go to your checkout, and you ring it up, and it comes down that you violated three isurei kares. Now, let's assume that the person did none of this with full intent. Okay, let's say he was a shogeg on all three. And so, therefore, now, when you go to the Kohen and you say, here's what I did. So the Kohen says, one chi of kares, two chi of kares, three chiyuve krisos. Okay, now let's go over each one of them. Number one is Shabbos, you're shechting on Shabbos. Okay, that's a malacha, right? Malacha of shechita. Number two, shechut echutz, shechting a carbon outside the base of Mikdash. That's an Isser Kares. Number three, you shecht for Avodah Zarah. When you're Oved Avodah Zarah, shechting for Avodah Zarah is Oved Avodah Zarah, that's your third Isser Kares. Now, the Gemara now is bothered by the following. Wait a second. I don't understand how this works. In order to be chayv on three isurei kares, they all have to come at one juncture. It cannot be right. Well, let's see the Gemara inside.
This says someone else's. It's not his.
Well, it's not his because it's a carbon.
But he did the act.
It's a carbon, and the carbon doesn't belong to you. We'll get to that in just a moment. Iamar kevin sheshacha basemen echad. Asra ashchut echut. I'm sorry. Asra ashchut echut lo lechayev mechatech ba'aferhu. So the Gemara says, just wait 1 second. You see, we just learned, according to Rav Chista, right? I said it wrong. I'm sorry, Rav Huna. Sorry. We just learned, according to Rav Huna, that when you shech something for avodah zarah, even if it doesn't belong to you, the moment that you start making an incision, it is now takrovis avodah zarah. It's prohibited. Now, at that moment, legally, you know what the animal is? Nothing. Nothing. The Gemara uses great terminology. It's afer. It's dirt. Meaning, think about it. It's aser behana. You can't get benefit from it. Right? You can even call it less.
Valid offering.
Huh?
It can't be a valid offering.
It can't be a valid offering. So you're going to be chayav on shchut echut. Now Rashi picks up on right away. The Gemara doesn't question Shabbos because, you see, Shabbos, we could still entertain the idea that it's chayav on Shabbos because to violate the malacha, all you need to do is just simply remove the life of the animal. So once you start making an incision into the neck, you're now removing the life of the animal. That is a malacha Shabbos. But shchut echut, however, so for that, you need to shech the animal outside the base of Mikdash. Now, Rashi, this is a little bit detailed. Rashi does mention that we learned about a week and a half ago, we did learn about the case where you started shechting the animal outside the base of Mikdash, you brought the animal inside the base of Mikdash, you are going to be violating the Isser Shechut Echutz, but Rashi points out that in that particular case, you did successfully shecht an animal. Part of it outside, part of it inside. Here, however, once you turned it into Shakrovitz Avodah Zarah, and that transition takes place, the moment you start making that incision, so that's it. The animal now is Takrovitz Avodah Zarah. So over here, whatever you do afterwards should be legally non-regarded. It's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. So how does it work? So Rav Papa's answer is, well, maybe the case over here is that it's not just a carbon. It's not an animal, it's a bird. And what is it by a bird? Siman echad. You only have to cut one siman. For a bird chatas. So the Gemara says, wait a second, that's really a good answer. So the Gemara says, remember now, we're in the world of Rav Huna, as understood by Ula. Even if we're saying it's a bird chatas, but still, takrovis avodah zarah occurs the moment you start cutting. Even before you finish that full siman. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what the case is over here? You held back on declaring it to be takrovis avodah zarah until you got to the end of shechita. And now we can have a union of all three surim, meaning shechting on Shabbos, shechting outside the Beis HaMikdash, and takrovis avodah zarah, because you said it's not going to be avodah zarah until I get to the end of shechita. Wait, huh? Let me first finish the train of thought of the Gemara, and then I'll be available for discussion. So the Gemara says, ingenious answer, but now we no longer have to confine ourselves to a chatas. Meaning this would be true by any karban. And the Braisa talks about a chatas. There must be a reason why the Braisa chose chatas. So Allah Marzutra Mishmedra Papa Achma Maiskin Kagon Shay Chatzakanapagam Vaso host of Allah called the Hu Vigamru Dukubada Dadika Asyan. So the Gemara says, you know what? It must be that it's a chatas, and not just a chatas, but a bird chatas, where all you need to do is one simon, and we're going to go to that funny case that we discuss very often, where half the windpipe is already lacerated. Remember, half of it being lacerated does not render it to be a trefa. And now, in order to perform shechita, all you need to do is just take a knife and just go in a little bit more.
But the thing is,
give me just a moment. It's a fair question, but just give me a moment. So now you got all three covered. So in other words, with that one little clip, so now you shechted on Shabbos, right? You shechted outside the Beis HaMikdash. You shechted for Avodah Zarah. All of that occurred at that moment where you made that one little clip. That's what the case of the Braisa is, and that's where we're going. Okay, good. And it doesn't upset the rule of Ula that the moment that you start making decisions, Takrovas Avodah Zarah, because over here, we're talking about, right, somewhat of a bizarre case, but we're talking about, yeah, it was already Chatzakana Pagum, you made that one little clip, and that's why in this particular case, it all can happen with that one little clip.
Two issues. One is that even if you can make a small incision, you made it a Baal Mum, so it's not a valid offering. The second decision is that this is a bird, so you cannot do shechita.
Right. So Rashi, on your second issue, Rashi deals with that issue because remember we're talking about bird. We're talking about outside the Beis HaMikdash. Bird outside shechut echutz for a bird outside the Beis HaMikdash cannot be accomplished with malika. Has to be accomplished with shechita.
Oh,
right.
You do malika outside, you didn't do shechut echutz. No, that's convenient.
It's convenient for our discussion. It's extraordinarily convenient, but it happens to be not just convenient. It happens to be correct. Rashi discusses that. And your first point?
The Baal Mum,
I don't know. Right. You got that one, you got me.
You have to visit Rashi in your dreams.
That one you got me. All right, we'll pause over here. Okay, tomorrow on Shabbos, we'll pick it up.